And we're holding Lamed Tes Amud Beis, three lines from the bottom by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, we're still talking about the topic of Tchumen, where we said you yourself are limited to a certain Tchum and things that belong to you also are. So the Mishnah says, Mishahu Peroitza Be'ir Acheres, a person who has produce in a different city. Now say he didn't make an Eruv Tchumen to be able to go to that city, but let's say the people of that city did make an Eruv Tchumen to come to him. The Eruv Bnei Oysa Ha'ir, people from that city made an Eruv Tchumen Lahavi Etzlani Peroysa, to bring some of his Peros to him on Yomdiv. Lo Yavi Lo, they're not allowed to bring it to him because those Peros follow his Tchum. In effect, really, what you have is those Peros are not going to be able to go any place because they're outside his tchum. It's like you have the din when a person himself is outside the tchum, then he's limited to four amos. So these peiros themselves are going to be limited to four amos as well. Or even if we say that maybe we could go according to them. In any case, it would go according to the original tchum that they had 2,000 amos, say, but not all the way to him, which is, let's say, 4,000 amos away. But if on the other hand he made an Eruv Tchumen, then it doesn't matter what they did, then his Peros are like him, so then they can't bring it all the way to him, let's say, but they would be able to bring it as far as they're able to walk, and he would be able to come there and pick it up and take it to his city, because he made an Eruv Tchumen. In other words, again, the point is it goes according to his Tchum, he being the owner, and not according to them who are taking care of it. Another din, the Mishnah says, Misha Zimin Etzlei Orchim, a person who invited guests on Yom Tov from a different city, where again, they're far away enough that they need an Eruv Tchumen to come. So, Lo Yelichu B'Yodam Monos. So now, when they leave, they're not allowed to take portions of food with them to bring home, which they're going to eat after Yom Tov. Eliam came, Zikol Lahem Monos Sehem Me'erev Yom Tov, unless he was mezakah to them that food from Erev Yom Tov. So Rashi says zikolah means al yidei acher, means you'd actually have to, like you do when you make an Erev Chatzeres or Erev Tavshilin, where you give it to somebody else and they pick it up and are zoicha in it on behalf of everybody else. So here you'd have to have that. I want to give a portion of food to my guests. I'm going to give each portion to somebody who's going to lift them up and be kohen to them on behalf of that person on Erev Yom Tov. So it works on the ground of Zach and the Adam Shalev Panov. And the point is, therefore, it's considered theirs as of Erev Yom Tov. So therefore, now when Yom Tov comes in, then it has their Tchum, and therefore they're going to be able to take it to their city by way of their Erev Tchum. So Rashi is saying over here that you have to actually mezakeh it to them. The Rashba and the Ran actually discuss that and say maybe not necessarily. For example, the Rashba says, maybe after all, we had a few days ago, the Gemara is going to bring later on, something that we had a few days ago in the Gemara about Shur Shal Patam, where you have an ox that a person is fattening up, where people come from different outlying towns to potentially buy it on Yom Tov, and we said that Shmuel said that it goes according to whoever you sold it to, whoever you end up selling it to, because since you want to sell it, so we gave a few reasons why it is that Shmuel would say that that would work, but in any case, the point is that that's what it does. It goes according to the tchum of the person who buys it. So why wouldn't we say the same thing over here? So in fact, he says, over there, you don't need to be mezakeh through somebody else. So the Rashba discusses that maybe indeed it would be enough to, not like Rashi, that you have to be mezakeh through somebody else. Maybe indeed it would just be enough that he verbally says before Yom Tov, this portion is going to be for this person, this portion is going to be for that person, and that would be good enough. There are different others. So the Ran also talks about a svara, why we would say over there that we're makel and over here not, because over there the customer comes directly to the patam to buy the animal. Here on Erev Yom Tov, the guest wasn't personally there in order to designate what part he wants. So therefore, there's maybe more of a reason to say that we should have to be mezakeh. Okay. So the Gemara starts off Itmar Hamakid Peres Etzo Chaveri. A case where a person is mafkid fruit by somebody else. So Reuven owns some fruit. He's mafkid it by Shimon. Now when Yom Tov comes in, it's in Shimon's house where Shimon is watching it. Whose tchum does it have, Reuven's or Shimon's? Rav Amar Kiragle Mishe Hifkidu Loi. So Rav says it goes according to the according to the tchum of Shimon, who was taking care of the pekudin, or Shmuel Amar Karagli Amafkid. Reuven, Shmuel says it goes according to Reuven, who owns it. So the Gemara says. So by the way, as far as that matter of Eli and Cain Zichalahem, actually Tosfos is the first one who points out this this one about why we need Zichalahem. So Tosfos gives a different answer also besides the ones that we said, that the Shoyal has more in, we said we had the case where a person, but not the case of Shoyal Papam, rather we have the case where a person borrows something on Yom Tov. And we have the case where a person borrows something on Yom Tov, as long as they arranged in advance before Yom Tov that he's going to borrow it, then that's good enough. That's the one from which we say. So why over there he doesn't need to be mezak to him before Yom Tov? And here we're saying that he does. So Tosfos gives the answer because the Shoyal has more of a smichus das that he's going to get that keli more than these guests will, that there's going to be portions of food for them to take home. So you have that, and then again, you have the different answers that we said about that maybe, in fact, it would be enough to just verbally designate it for them, like the Rashba says, or maybe because the difference is that there he's coming in person and picking it up. Well, here also they're coming in person, but still on Erev Yom Tov, they didn't. They weren't there b'chlal on Erev Yom Tov, so therefore, yeah. Okay. So anyway, so back to the Gemara. Itmar hamafkid peretz etz chaveri, Rav amakaragli mishiv kiduloi. So Rav says it goes according to the shomer, or Shmuel amakaragli hamafkid. Shmuel says it goes according to the owner. So the Gemara says, Lema Rav Shmuel da azdu l'taymai. Can we say that Rav and Shmuel are going according to their respective shittis that we find as far as a din involving a pekodin? Ditnan, namely, we learn the Mishnah in Bava Kamma. So you have a case over there. It starts out where a person brings in his shur, or he brings in his kalim or whatever into somebody else's chotzer without rishus. So then you have the din that the owner of the chotzer is not chayev for anything that happens to them. And if they cause damage, then the owner of the shur or the pots or whatever is going to be chayev. But the Mishnah continues in hichnis bat bishus bala chotzer chayev. On the other hand, if he brought it in with the permission of the owner of the chotzer, then if he brought it in with permission bala chotzer chayev, then the owner of the chotzer is chayev for any damages that happen to the object. Rebbe Omer La'olam Eini Chayev. On the other hand, Rebbe says he's not Chayev. Actually, Kabbal the Balabais Lishma. Unless the Balabais explicitly says, I accept on myself the Shmira. So in other words, there can be where he brought it in completely without Rishus. There can be where the Balabas said, fine, go ahead, bring it in. But he didn't say anything about being a Shomer for it. And then there can be where the Balabas says, bring it in, I'll be Shomer for you. So Rebbe is saying, only in that last case is he Chayev. In the other two cases, he'd be Potter. So now, in that machlokas, Rav Huna tells us in the name of Rav that the halacha is like the chachamim. So even if he didn't explicitly say, I'll be shomer, the fact that he gave permission to bring that shur or those kalim in is enough to make him chayev for any damages that happen to them. And Shmuel said, no, only like Rebbe, that only if he says, I'm going to watch them. Now, if we apply that to Armachloikas, Leber Rav Dama Kerabon or Shmuel Dama Kerebi, it would seem that Rav and Shmuel are being consistent with their opinions. What Rav is saying over here, Keragle Mishi Hikiduloi, would be only according to the Chachamim. The Chachamim who say that even if he didn't accept explicitly that I will be Shomer, nevertheless, it's in his Rishus, that's enough to make him Chayev for their Nezakin. By the same token, Rav would say the fact that it's by him, that the Peiros are by him, is enough for us to consider that it goes according to his Tchum. Whereas Shmuel, who says that according to Rebbe, that only if he accepts on himself to be Shomer, would say that therefore that in general we're going to go according to the Maftim. That we're going to go according to the Balabas, just as Shmuel says over there, that we go according to the Balabas and we still make him chayev for what happens. We still make him only responsible for what happens if the shur damages or whatever, and not the Balabais. The answer is not necessarily. Amalach Rab, anod amri afilul Rebbe. What I'm saying could even be according to Rebbe. It's true that in that machlokas I hold the halacha is like the chachamim, but I would say the din that I'm saying over here, that we go according to the tchum of kirag lemishi kiduloi, the one who is watching the pekudin, that could work even according to Rebbe. Ad kan like Amar Rebbe Hossam Eladibistama like Kabbalah Lentirusa. You know why Rebbe is saying over there he's Potter? Because if he didn't specify and say, I am taking the responsibility for this, then we assume that he didn't. We assume that all he did is he wanted to give permission for the other guy to drop off his shor or whatever in his chotzer, but not to the extent that he should actually become a shomer on it and be chayiv in all the things that a shomer is chayiv in. Here, when Reuven deposited the peiros with Shimon before Yom Tov, he did. It was a regular case of a mafkid and a shomer. He did accept on himself that he's going to be shomer. So even Rebbe would say that's like the case where the balabos says, "Fine, I accept shmira of this ox." And even Rebbe would say that he's chayev then. So therefore, so our din says Rab could work even according to Rebbe. Ushmul aman not the amri afilu l'rabbanon, and vice versa. Shmuel can say my din when I say it goes according to the mafkid would work even according to the rabbanon. Ad kam like amir rabbanon hasam. You know why the chachamim say over there that we don't necessarily assume that he accepted shmira for it. Elo de nichle le inish the nikum tore b'shusa de bal chotzer. The person who owns the shur actually has a preference for saying as soon as possible that it's in the reshus of the person who's leaving it in his chotzer. In other words, it's in his best interest, even if the bala chotzer doesn't accept on himself the shmira, the bala shor would like him to. Because that way he gains from it. After all, if then that shor causes hezek, then he's not going to be chayev. So from the point of view of the bala shor, He would like to assume that as soon as he gets permission to put his shur in that chotzer, that in effect is the bala chotzer saying I'm accepting any responsibility for it, even if he didn't say so. And therefore, the chachamim say that's enough for him to be chayev for anything that happens, and vice versa, potter if the shur injures the bala chotzer himself, etc. Aval hocha.
With that reasoning, you could say the exact same thing in reverse. In favor of the bala chotzer.
That's fine, but one second. Hoch aval hocha, but over here, it's not just a question of the shomer whether he wants to take responsibility or not. At least over there, we can say fine. The shomer may not like the idea of taking responsibility, but at least on the other hand, the mafkid has reason that it'll benefit him to do that. Over here, what does he have to gain by having the peiros be in the other guy's reshus? So not only the other guy is not necessarily accepting responsibility for it to that extent. Well, okay, over here he is a shomer, but on the other hand, we have to look at things from the point of view of the owner of the peiros. Why would it be in his interest to have it completely be considered in the other guy's reshus? Ad kedekach, that now it's going to have that other guy's tchum, and now therefore he's going to be restricted. He himself is going to be restricted where he can carry it. He wouldn't want that. So he would prefer that even though he's giving it to the other guy to watch, he would prefer that he himself retains a certain degree of ownership over it to that extent, namely that it goes according to his tchum. Whereas with the case of the ox, he has no interest in keeping any degree of responsibility for it at all, because as far as he's concerned, he'd like to wash his hands of the responsibility. So therefore, even the Rabbanan, who say over there that fine, the fact that the owner of the ox wants it to be there might be reason enough, unless in other words, the Chachamim would say, if the Balabas didn't want that, he should say so explicitly. If he says, fine, you can bring it into my chotzer, but I'm not taking responsibility for it. Of course, the chachamim would agree he's not responsible. But like this, the chachamim say, if he doesn't say anything, since the mafkid has an interest in wanting him to be responsible, then if he doesn't say I'm not responsible, then we assume that he is. Whereas Rebbe says he has to say so explicitly. But over here, even implicitly, there's no reason to think that the owner of the peiros wants the other guy to have. Wants the other guy's tchum to be the deciding factor on where these payers can go, because he doesn't gain anything from it. So even the chachamim might well agree with what Shmuel's saying over here that it goes according to the mafkid. Okay, so now let's look at our Mishnah and see which one our Mishnah fits better according to. Tnan, now we learned in the Mishnah, Vim Erev Hu Peiros of Kamaru. So we have the case where we said if they made an Erev to bring him the fruit, then that doesn't help. But if he makes an Erev to go in that direction, such that his Erev Tchumen includes that city where the Peiros are, then the Peiros are like him. Now, if you say that if you say like Rav that it goes that it anyway goes according to the tchum of the other people, the people of the other city, ki eruv hu mai havi. How does it help if he makes an eruv? The fact is, he was masked it by them before Yom Tov, because that's the case. The pashtus, it means that they're shomerim for him. So therefore, it goes according to Rav, it goes according to their tchum. So how does his making an Erev Chatzeres help, an Erev tchum, and I mean help, that now those Peiros should be able to go past their tchum into his, and into his, which overlaps with it. Different Mephoshim ask, by the way, why the Gemara is asking the question from the Sefer of the Mishnah, V'im Erev Hu, why not from the Reisha, where we're saying, Lo Yaviu Loi, which implies, in other words, that it goes according to their tchum. So there's a few answers, one of them being, the Ran brings this up as a possibility, and the Pnei Yeshua also discusses this, that maybe in the Reisha of the Mishnah, when we say Lo Yaviu Loi, doesn't mean maybe it goes according to their tchum. Maybe it means it goes only according to the overlapping tchum of the both of them. Keragli Shtehem, like we had in several previous Mishnayos, where we say it can't go beyond the area where both he and they are allowed to go. Not necessarily does the ratio of the Mishnah mean that it's allowed to go in the whole area where they can, just not outside of that. So therefore, so that wouldn't show that it goes Kiragle the Shomer. Only from the Sefer where we see Vim Eder Hu Peiros of Kamayu clearly tells us it goes according to his Tchum, and that would contradict Rav. So Omer of Huna, Amri Bei Rav, they say in the Yeshiva of Rav, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that when we have that expression, Amri Bei Rav, it means Rav Hamnuna said it. Kigoyin sheyichad lo keren zavis. What we're talking about over here is he's not really a shomer. What he did is he set aside a corner of his house, so like he lent him his house, so a corner of his house as a place where he can keep his payers. So in other words, the difference is in the case of the ox or the kalim or whatever, the shomer actually did meshicha on them. So he was actually koina them, and therefore we can talk about was he koina them to the extent where now he's chayev in their nezakim. Yes, according to the Chachamim, even if he didn't say, I'm accepting their Shmira, and no, according to Rebbe, unless he explicitly says, I'm accepting Shmira. Here, there was no Meshicha at all. All he did is, he told them, fine, here's a corner of my house available. You can put your Peiros there. So therefore, there was no Meshicha ever for him to become a Shomer. So therefore, even Rav would agree, sure, then it goes according to the Tchum of the owner of it. It happens to be in the other guy's house, but that's not. Okay, the Gemara says Toshma. Let's look at the next part of the Mishnah. It says Misha Zimin Etzlei Orchim. We said a person invited guests to his house from a different city. Lo Yelichu B'Yadam Monos. We said they're not allowed to take portions of food with them back to their city because it would be outside of the tchum of this food. Elim Ken Zikol Lahem Monosei Me'erav Yom Tov. Unless he was mezakeh them through somebody else according to Rashi, or maybe not even through somebody else according to the Rashba, etc. Before Yom Tov. Now again, if you say like Rav that we go according to the one that you were mafkid it by, so what does it help if he's mezakeh to them through somebody else? He's still the shomer of that food until he serves it to them on Yom Tov. So therefore, according to Rav's logic, it should still go according to his tchum regardless. The fact that he was mezakeh to them on Erev Yom Tov, fine, that's no better than if they had been mafkid it by him before Yom Tov and was still saying that Rav says it goes according to his tchum. And the answer is Hochingami. Here also we can answer Kivin Shazikal Hamaydeacher. Once he was Mizaka to them through somebody else, Kimisha Yichad like Keren Zavis dummy, then it's as if he set aside a corner for them, because the whole point is, why was he Mizaka to them before Yom Tov? Because he wants it to be in their Rishus. He wants it that they should be able to take them home, that they should be able to take them home after the meal on Yom Tov. Therefore, we can say that it's true they're in his house, and it's true it's his food, but the fact that he did such a maisa with it shows that the bedavka wants to put it in their reshus before Yom Tov, which would be similar, in other words, therefore, to the cases that we had before about a person borrowing a keli on Yom Tov where the mashal had in mind to lend it to him before Yom Tov because they already prearranged it, and the case of the shoshal patam, which the Gemara is going to bring soon, that people come from other cities to buy it, and we say that they're allowed to take it home with them. So here it would be the same idea. So that's one answer. So Kivin Zika Lahem Idaha Kamish Yikal Karen Zavazdami. The Iboy same as Zika Shiny. Or A different answer is that, after all, Zika is different. So another two things. One is, sorry, so the Zika shiny, what we were just saying, is actually the second answer. The first answer is, once Zika lahem ayde acher, then it's the equivalent of saying, this doesn't belong to me anymore, and I'm just putting it in a keren zavis, and I have no reshus over it. And the second answer is, Zika shiny, since he's doing it in order to take it out of his reshus and put it into theirs, then therefore that works. So that would be a special case, but not the regular case. In other words, where there was no such Zika, and now the maskid wants to come and pick up his payrus and yomtiv, then Rav would say that no, it goes according to the tchum of the shomer, and therefore the maskid can't take it out of there. But here he was mezakeh beforehand. He was mezakeh through somebody else, and therefore that's the equivalent of putting it in a corner and reserving it for them. Or in any case, or the other possibility is Zika shiny. The whole point is he's working to put it in their reshus, and therefore that works, and now it's in their reshus. Okay. So the Gemara tells a case in this connection. Rav Chana bar Chaniloi tola bisra be'ibra d'dosha. Rav Chana bar Chaniloi hung some meat at the place where he was staying over Yom Tov. So he had meat that he had been given before Yom Tov. He had meat that he bought from a butcher in town before Yom Tov. He lived in a different city. So they're going to, so actually no, they didn't give him the meat on Erev Yom Tov. What it is, well, yeah, they gave him the meat on, what it is he lives in a different city, Rav Chana bar Chaniloi. He's going to come to this city by means of an Erev Tchumen. So he bought the meat on Erev Yom Tov, hung it be'ibra d'dosha on the bolt of the door for safekeeping, and then on Yom Tov he wants to take it home with him. So also the Kamed Rav Huna. So he came to ask Rav Huna whether he's going to be able to take that meat home, or does it have the tchum of the city where it stored at Yom Tov in? Amalei, so Rav Huna tells him, e'atolis, if you yourself hung that meat up on the door bolt, zil shokil, then go ahead, you can take it. The inu toluloch, but if they hung it up for you, loy tishko, then you shouldn't take it. So now let's see how this fits with everything we just said. The e'ihu tola, so if he hung it up, mi shokil, how would he be allowed to take it? How does that help? Rav Huna Talmud Rav Abba, isn't Rav Huna a Talmud of Rav? But Omar Rav Kirag Menishiv Kidu Etzloi. Rav had said that it goes according to the Shomer. So in that case, it was in that city. The people of the inn where he's staying, or the owner of the inn, is the Shomer. And according to Rav, it goes according to him. So therefore, Rav Huna should be paskening like Rav. The answer is, obviously the Gemara could have answered that Rav Huna, being an Amora and Rav is also an Amora, he could argue with him. But in general, the Gemara usually assumes that a Talmud usually holds like his Rebbe, unless we have reason to say otherwise. So, and since Rav was the Rabbi Muvhak of Rav Huna, then therefore we're not going to assume that Rav Huna is arguing with Rav, unless we have a specific reason to do so. So the answer is, again, shiny ibrida dasha. It's different when it's hung on the door bolt. The kamishi yichad the keren zavis dummy. Again, we can say that's the equivalent of putting it in a keren zavis. They didn't actually do mashicha on it. They put it on the door bolt, saying, in other words, we're reserving it for Rav Chana bar Chaniloi. So that's the equivalent of putting it in a keren zavis, and therefore, in other words, that it becomes in his reshus. Which, by the way, it comes out then in that case that we're using keren zavis kind of in the opposite way that we used it before. Before we were using it as that it's not really the opposite way, actually, because over there we were talking about the payrus belonged to Reuven, and then Shimon is giving him a keren zavis in his house. Here we have similarly, it is actually the same kind of thing. The meat, Rav Chana bar Chaniloi bought the meat before Yom Tov, so it's his. He's leaving it for safekeeping in the inn, and they're putting it on a keren zavis. So they're putting it in a keren zavis, or in this case, hanging it on the door bolt for him. So in that case, then it stays in his tchum. But the Gemara asks on the premise, why should we say that there was a problem anyway? Are you telling me that if they hung it up for him, then he wouldn't be allowed to take it? Which is what Rav Huna is saying. Why? We had the din a few days ago in the Gemara where a shur that belongs to a fattener, where again he fattens it up and it becomes famous in the area and people come from nearby cities in order to buy it. So we said that whoever buys it on Yom Tov is allowed to take it to wherever they live. And we gave various reasons over there why that should be. But all of them come down to the idea, in other words, that we don't say it goes according to his tchum. We say, for one reason or another, that we assign it their tchum, whether because of Breira, whether because he has in mind before Yom Tov that it's whether because he makes it hefker in effect, and therefore now somebody picks it up and gives it a tchum like a chefetz of hefker that we talked about the other day, or the various other reasons that we said. Whatever the case, the point is, So once he had in mind that whoever buys it is going to be able to take it, the same thing over here. It's already in their machshava that Rav Chana bar Chaniloy is going to take this meat, and we see they hung it up on the door for him. So why, if they hung it up, would it be a problem for him to take it home? Again, I mean, obviously, you know, we could answer that's according to Shmuel. Here we're talking according to Rav. But in fact, we said over there that Shmuel was a little more machmir in these dinim than Rav anyway. Shmuel had said that if you have partners that have a chavis or an animal, they're not allowed to divide it up on Yom Tov because he holds Ein Breira. And Rav had said to a certain extent there is Breira over there. So if Shmuel holds that it's allowed, then B'Pashtus, truly Rav would. So that's one question. Amaleh Ravina L'Ravashi. And Ravina asked Rav Ashi, here's another reason why we should ask why it should be a problem if they hung it. The in who tolu loy shakul. So if they hung it up, then why is Rav Huna saying he can't take it? We had a few days ago a machloikas of the Chachamim and Rav Doisa, where a person buys an animal out of Yom Tov, and we had the case to be exact, where he gave it to a roya. We gave it to a roya to watch. And the question was, whose tchum does it follow? And we had over there the distinction that if there's only one roya in town, then, and we said that's the case Rav Doisa is talking about, then it goes according to his tchum, because then inevitably it's going to be by him. And we don't need Breira, we don't need anything before Yom Tov. It was already known that it's going to be by that roya. So here it's the equivalent of one roya. The meat belongs to the Pchon HaBachani Loi, no one else. So for that reason alone, that should be reason that he should be able to take it, regardless whether he's the one who hung it there or not. And a third one, Amalei Rav Ashi L'Rav Kahana. It seems that this was being discussed in the Bais Medrash, because first you have Rav Hillel asking Rav Ashi, then you have Rav Ashi, then you have Ravina asking Rav Ashi, and now we have Rav Ashi himself going and asking Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana was one of Rav Ashi's Rebbeim, by the way, and the other two, Rav Hillel and Ravina, were Chaverim or Tamidim of Rav Ashi. So they're all in the Bais Medrash together, apparently. Anyway, so he asked Rav Kahana, the inhu tolu leilei shokil. Here's a third reason why we should argue that even if they hung up for him, they hung it up for him, why shouldn't he be allowed to take it? When we started a few days ago, this whole concept of tchumen an yomdev, we started with the basic rule, animals and kelim go according to the owner. So he's the owner of that meat. They hung it up for him. So therefore he should be able to take it. With that said, a couple of Rishonim have a problem with that, because fine, okay, of course we said Habehema Vakelim Kiragva Bailam, but then we've been talking about all kinds of exceptions, one of them being the case where there's a Shomer, like Rav is saying. So therefore, Rabbeinu Chananel instead has a different girsa, where we ask, based on the case that we had a few days ago, Hashoyo Kli Mechaveira B'Yomtev, where a person borrows a keli from somebody else on Yomtev, and we said the case was that he arranged the borrowing on Erev Yomtev, and then he only picked it up on Yomtev, then it would be Karagli Hashoyo. So we see, in other words, as long as it was arranged before Yomtev, then it goes according to him. So why over here, and it doesn't make a difference, of course, who set aside the keli. So why over here would we say that it makes a difference who hung up the meat? Ella, no. Rather, we're going to answer, it has nothing to do with tchumen. Shiny Rav Chana bar Chaniloy, the Gabra Rabahu, Rav Chana bar Chaniloy is a special case. He's a great person. He's a Talmud Chacham. The Torid B'Shmaitei. He's very busy with his learning. So in other words, what happens is you have like this. There's a concept in halacha called Bosef Shenis Alam Min Ayin. When you have meat that was out of sight of a yid for some period of time, and there might be, hypothetically, you might have it was exchanged with treif for meat. Now Rav holds Bosef Shenis Alam Min Ayin Oser, even if there's not necessarily a reason to specifically think that it was swapped out, but the very fact that it was Nis Alam Min Ayin makes it Oser. Which the halacha is like that to a certain extent, which makes it it's not always across the board. Otherwise, every time you have meat in your fridge and leave the house, you'd have a problem. But you have, to a certain extent, when you have, for example, one common case where it comes up is at a workplace, for example, you put meat in the fridge over there, unless you make some kind of simen on it, then or at least you have to be a sign in it, then you may have a problem because it might have gotten swapped out with somebody else's. So one thing is, you need that. If you have to be a sign in it, then fine. The thing is that the thing is, Rav Chana bar Chani Loi, being a Talmid Chacham, he's busy with his learning, so therefore he may not have to be a sign. But Hachikamalei, so therefore what Rav Huna is telling him is, based on Rav's Shitta involving Bosish and its Alam and Ayin, E at Tolis, if you hung up that meat, Islach Simona Begave, then you have a simon on it, because you hung it up there, therefore you noticed it at the time, you at least have a Tvias Ayin on it. So later on, when you come and take that meat, you know, you can recognize, but you may not have a specific simon. Tvias Ayin afterwards, you can't specifically say, but you know it when you see it. So then you'll know it when you see it, and then you'll be able to take it. V'loi maschas daita minei, v'loi maschas daita minei, you have not been masiach das from it, zil shkel, therefore you're going to be allowed to take it. The inu toluloch, but if they hung it up for you, you don't even have it. To be a sign, maschas daitach, you may have had a hesach das on it. You don't have it to be a sign on it. You don't know. You didn't have your das on it the whole time. The loy tishko, therefore you're not allowed to take it because it's bosser shenis alam and ayin. It's in a Jewish house, so there's no real reason to be concerned that they swapped it out with trefa meat. Doesn't matter. The din of bosser shenis alam and ayin would make it also on those grounds. Rashi says another thing, Loshen Acham, Shem Mukta. So Rashi doesn't elaborate what he means by that, but another possibility Rashi is saying is that it is with the dinim of Yom Tov, but not Chumin, like we were talking about, but rather Mukta. If he was Masiach Das from it, then it would be Mukta. Then it would be Mukta because he doesn't have his Das on it. Because of the issue of Bostich and Salam and Ayin again, that therefore that makes it that he doesn't have a full das that he's actually going to be able to take it on Yom Tov, because he doesn't even know, because according to Rav's Shitta, that meat may taka be off limits. Okay. The Mishnah says, Ein mashkin v'sheichten es amidborius. Animals that live out in the midbar, out in the wild, we have to realize, by the way,
midbar. So what's the halacha, finally?
Okay, so the halacha as far as Bosesh and Salam and Ayin is basically like Rav. In general, the halacha is like Rav in Dini Isser V'Heter, but you have details about it in Shulchan Aruch. First of all, like we're saying over here, if you have a Tvias Ayin in it, it's Mutter. If you have it Choysam B'Sar Choysam, a seal inside another seal, then it's Mutter. You have cases where it is Mutter. But yeah, there are cases where if you have meat that was in a place where somebody could potentially swap it out, then you may have issues with it. As far as the original machlokes about hamaskin peiros etzel chaveroi, again, the halacha, again, usually Rav and Shmuel, usually the halacha is like Rav, and that's how it would be over here. So the Mishnah says, "Ein mashkin v'shechten es amidbarius." You're not allowed to water and shecht animals that live in the midbar. We have to remember, you know, we always think of midbar like you have the midbar that the Jewish people traveled in for 40 years. We usually think of a midbar as like the Sahara Desert. You know, it's sand dunes and rocks, and you know, nothing grows there. A midbar in Torah terminology can also be a place where there's grazing for animals, more like what in English is called a steppe. But not where it's completely barren. It's not a place where you can cultivate, where you can grow grain or fruit or vegetables or what have you. But certain things will grow there, grasses or lichens or things like that that animals can eat. So that's what we're talking about over here. That you have animals that are out in the midbar, out in places like that, where they're grazing. So the Mishnah is saying you're not allowed to water and shech them on Yom Tov, and we're going to talk about in the Gemara about the watering. We talked about it in the Siyum last night as well. Av mashkin b'shech, and it's a bisis, but we are allowed to water and shech the bisis, the animals that stay around the house. Now, in both cases, we're talking about domestic animals. We're not talking about wild animals. There you have different issues, because you have issues involving seda, and you have issues that we talked about previously in the Masechta, that animals that are not mezonos and alecha, where they don't depend on you for their food and water, then you're not allowed to feed them on Yom Tov anyway. So here we're talking about, these are domesticated animals. These are cattle or sheep or goats. But they go and graze out. They go out and graze in the wild, but they still belong to you. So you think of a large cattle ranch, let's say, for example. You know, you might have the animal, the ranch is miles long, and the animals are going and grazing someplace at the other end of it, but they still belong to you. So Elohein Bisis, what's the definition of Bisis? Halonis Be'ir is the ones that stay overnight in the city. So every night they graze, they go out in the daytime to graze, but then at night they come back to the city and sleep there, or at least within the tchum of the city, as the Gemara is going to say. Midbarius, Halonis Ba'afer, Midbarius then would be defined as ones that sleep out in the wild, and they don't come back into the city even at night. So the Gemara starts off. Lomali lamema mashkin v'shech. Then why does the Mishnah mention that you water them and you give the and then you shech them? So the answer is milsa agav urche kamash malon, because the Mishnah, by the way, wants to tell us something. Delashki inish behemta v'hador lishchay. A person should give his animal water to drink and then shech it nishum sircha demashcha, because of the stickiness of the hide of the skin. Where, in other words, it becomes easier to skin the animal after you shechted it if you gave it a drink first. Or we have a number of Rishonim, the Rif and the Rambam and several other Rishonim explain that it means sirchus, as in what you have on the lungs, like we talked about last night, that you have certain sirchus that are not a problem, certain ones that might be a problem and you have a machlokas aposkim whether they're good, and other ones that make the animal completely treif. When you give the animal a drink before you shecht it, then it helps break off some of those sirchus, and therefore you're likely to have less problems with the kashrus of the animal. So Bepnimius, we talked about last night what's brought in various sichas about the idea that mashkin means on a deeper level you use water, you use en mayim el Torah to make it possible to snap off some of the places where the Yetzihara, where the Nefesh HaBahamas is trying to prevent you from doing what you're supposed to do, like trying to prevent the lung from functioning. And also it makes it easier then to distinguish the ur and the bosser aspect of life. The bosser, the parts that you're supposed to work on, the pnimius, and the ur, the parts that you're supposed to, that you work on more b'chitzonius. So it helps you when you have that mentality of mayim, then it helps to be able to distinguish those. There's also in one of those hadronim, actually, the Rebbe also talked about the idea. You have this distinction also made in this point about mashkin is also mentioned in Masech the Tomid in connection with the Korban Tomid, where it says they gave the Korban Tomid a golden cup to drink out of before they shechted it. So why do we need it to be told that both here in Beitza and over there in Tomid? Because one is about Chulin and one is about Kodshim. You would say that maybe by Kodshim there you're allowed to do it, but maybe here by Chulin on Yom Tov you're not allowed to, and therefore it needs to be told over here and vice versa. On the other hand, you might say that only over here. Is it something that you should do, but over there by Kodshim, maybe you're doing extra things over there. So the vote is it needs to be said in both places. And it also represents the idea that both in the Chulin and the Kodshim aspect of life, it's important to be able to remove those sirchus of both kinds before you get down to Avodah. Tananabonon, we learn in a Braisa. Elohein midbarius ve'elohein bisis. What's the definition of midbarius versus bisis? Midbarius is kosher yotzis for Pesach. When they go out from the city at Pesach time, which is the springtime, there's new grass growing, whatever. V'royas ba'afer, they graze in, they graze in the meadows out there. And they stay out there the entire season. V'nichnasis v'revir rishayna, they only come back into town when the first rain starts falling. So that would be considered midbarius, the fact that they stay away for all those months at a time. The Elohein Bisis, kosher yotzis, v'royas chutbatchum, or voice v'lonis v'sechatchum. Bisis then would be where they go and graze outside the tchum, and then they come and stay, and then they come every night and sleep inside the tchum. Rebbe Omer Elo v'Elo Bisis, hein? Rebbe says, no, both of those would be bisis. The fact that they come back at all still makes them bisis. Ella, Elohen Midborius, Kosh Yotis, Varoyas Ba'afer, Midborius rather would be ones that go and graze out in the meadows, the Ednichnosis Liyushuv, Loib Mesacham of Loib Mesachshamim. Even during the winter time, they don't come back until you bring them back. So therefore, that would be Rebbe's definition of Midborius. in terms of avodah, you have what we were talking about yesterday from the Rebbe's Hadron, that the Chachamim are saying, at least if you have a person who, when things are getting dark for him, begashmius or beruchnius, he realizes that Sfanana gotaf and velt have to come back, then he can be considered bisis. But if he doesn't even realize under those conditions, then he's even barius and he's off limits. You're not going to be able to reach him. And Rebbe, being a Nasi of Yisrael, is saying, no, even someone like that, you could still reach him. He never comes home, not be Moshe Chaman, not be Moshe Shaman, nevertheless, lo yudach menu nedach. So the question is, umi isle the Rebbe mukta? The cloud, does Rebbe hold of this broad concept of mukta such that we should say that these animals are considered mukta? Because they never come home. In other words, what are we saying? Rebbe is saying, I agree there is something called midbarius. I just hold that we define midbarius differently than you, Chachamim, do. You say they're midbarius if they don't come home every night. I say they're midbarius even if they only come home during some parts of the year. But in other words, Rebbe is accepting that midbarius, you can't shecht on Yom Tov. But does Rebbe really hold of that? We find that Rav Shimon b'Rebbe asked Rebbe, "Pas ilay tmara l'Rav Shimon mahu? What would be the din according to Rav Shimon with pas ilay tmara on Yom Tov?" So Rashi explains, "Pas ilay tmara is dates that will never of a type that never ripen on the tree. So you pick them while they're still unripe." You put them inside chaisolos, which are kalim made out of woven palm leaves, sort of like the keishalach that the velt uses for the hadassim and arabis. You put these dates inside those, and they ripen in them. Nowadays, also, you know, you have some kinds of fruits like that, but they don't ripen. Bananas are much like that. They don't ripen. They don't actually. If you let them ripen on the tree, they're just going to spoil. They actually pick them when they're green, and they ripen off the tree. So here it's similar. So you pick these dates while they were unripe, you put in them inside the chaisolos, or you were allowed to break open those chaisolos and eat them on Yom Tov. So Rebbe answers it, Ein mukta l'Rav Shimon, ela gregor tzitzimukin bilvad. The only thing, according to Rav Shimon, that would be mukta is only gregor tzitzimukin, where originally they were edible, and then you would doicha b'yadayim, you said, I don't want to eat them right now, I want to make dried fruit out of them. So now, while they're drying, they're not really edible. So those would be mukta, but these pats ilay tmara, you weren't doicha them b'yadayim. To begin with, they weren't ripe. They weren't edible, and then you were doicha them. And in fact, some people will eat them as is while they're in the chaisolos. So unlike the drying figs and grapes, where nobody's going to eat them while they're in the process of drying. Now, the assumption is, if Rebbe is explaining Rav Shimon's shitta in that, it means he holds like Rav Shimon. And therefore, the question is, again, so we see, according to Rebbe, therefore, that we have a very narrow definition of mukta. Therefore, why should the midbarius be included in that? You weren't necessarily doicha them b'yadayim. Actually, the Me'iri on our Gemara does have an explanation that maybe, in fact, the midbarius, he says, maybe we are talking about ones where you were doicha b'yadayim. Let's say you have an animal that's particularly noisy or particularly smelly or whatever, so you don't really want it around the town, so you encourage it to go out and stay in the afar as much as possible. But anyway, Tosfos has a different explanation of this patzilei tmara. They explain, rather, it does mean, what it means is, these are unripe figs. They are eventually, unlike what Rashi is saying, these are figs, these are not figs, dates. Unlike Rashi is saying that these are dates that are never going to ripen on the tree, here Tosfos explains these are ones, if you left them on the tree, they would eventually ripen. What you do is, you get them, you cut them before they're ripe. You break them open, patzile, meloshin poitzin, you break them open, you cut them in half with a knife, and you put them up onto the roof to dry them out. Now, on the other hand, now, unlike the gregos hatzimukin, which were, again, those were fully ripened figs or grapes, and now you decided to make them into dried figs or raisins, therefore you were doicha them b'yadayim, here you weren't doicha them b'yadayim because when you picked them before they were b'chlal ready to eat. So therefore, Rebbe is saying Rav Shimon would not consider those mukta. Again, the assumption is if Rebbe is saying that, it means he holds like that. So the Gemara says a few possibilities. One possibility is the midbarius are indeed like grogos mukin. Maybe because, like the Me'iri says, these are animals that you were doicha b'yadayim. You push them out because you taka don't want them to be in town too much. A second possibility is we don't say just because he's explaining what Rav Shimon says doesn't mean he holds like him. Or third possibility, the Devarim D'Rabbanan Kamalahu. When Rebbe is talking about the definition of Bisis versus Midbarius, he's saying, according to you, Chacham, he's saying like this, Libi D Ein Mukta. As far as I'm concerned, there's no applicability of Mukta to this. They're not like Rogersati Mukim, and therefore any animal, any domestic animal, whether it's Midbarius or Bisis, whether it comes home regularly or never comes home at all, is within limits to take in Shecht and Yom Tov, and applying that to what the Rebbe said, and that sicha, then any yid, even if you never see him in shul, not every day, not every Shabbos, not even Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, you never see him have any connection with Yiddishkeit. Nevertheless, he still does. Rebbe is saying from his point of view as a nasi should be Yisrael. El l'didchu, but he says to the Chachamim, at least you, the Rabbim, Oyduli mihas, at least you should agree, the hecha the yotzis v'royis pesach v'nichnasas v'reviyah rishoyna, at least if they start coming home when it's raining, so at least they see the weather is getting bad, we need to go where we belong, which also applies then to the way it is with a yid, where he sees that things are getting difficult, let's return el chavar shuva el ishiha rishon. The bises, and at least you Chachamim should agree that those are considered bises. Those are still something within our tchum to be able to deal with. But Amr Le Rabbanan, Lo Midbarius, saying, and the Chachamim say, no, they're still Midbarius unless they come home every night. Every night, also representing that every time they realize there's any degree of choshech, they start coming back. Then fine, we can consider those bises, even if most of the time, even if the whole day they're spending out in the afro, not realizing that they depend on the balabas. But at least they have to come home every night. And now we're saying, according to this last explanation, Rebbe goes to the opposite extreme. Not only they don't come home at night, but they never come home. Nevertheless, there's still bises, and we still have the ability to be poil on them and to shech them. Hadron alach mashilin peiros a slikim asech the beta. Thank everyone.